FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Welcome along to the FWA podcast. Every week we get a chance to talk to one of the best football writers in the business. And this week's no different. We've got Chris Bascombe, the Merseyside football correspondent for The Telegraph, with us to have a chat about all things that are big in the world of football. How are you, Chris? You all right?
Not so badly. Not so bad. Bit of a miserable night from a Liverpool perspective.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
there you go.
It was. I mean, we're going to have a look back at the Champions League, have a little chat about someone who always seems to feature in it, and have a quick look forward to the weekend as well. The results all round weren't particularly good for Manchester City or Liverpool. Chelsea, of course, did fantastically well and just breezed past Maribor, and Arsenal got a great result before we move on to the Northwest clubs. Chelsea, they look every bit the kind of semi-finalists of the Champions League at the moment, don't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, they just sort of look so formidable. I mean, you're half wondering when they play the next home game where there'll be a podium out there just giving them the league title, because they're just so far ahead of everybody else at the moment. And, you know, it just shows you what, you know, a couple of top draw signings does for you, Fabregas. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, even, you know, everyone said, what would you buy without Costa? Well, it didn't seem to be too bad the other night, did they? So, I mean, you know, whatever anybody makes of Mourinho or thinks of Mourinho, I think he is the best manager in the world at the moment myself. He can win games in many different ways, and the way he's just made those adjustments to that Chelsea team, you just got to admire them. I mean, they just look fantastic. It must be thrilling for Chelsea fans to go to Stamford Bridge every week.
Yeah, I fancied Anderlecht to either draw the game or win the game. I thought they were a fairly big price at home. Having watched the highlights, Arsenal were slightly fortunate to get away with a draw, let alone a win. I mean, they led a charmed life for much of the second half and popped up with two late goals to win the game.
Well, this is Arsenal. I mean, they don't really seem to change much year on year. You never really know what you're going to get out of them. No. I mean, there's a style of play which is admirable, but I think it's almost a recurring argument every year. Is Arsenal too much of an idealist and not really evolving to bring the brawn with the skill of his players, but you know, they're capable of scoring and playing in flashes, playing in 15-minute bursts where they destroy opponents, getting up two or three in. And I mean, I never obviously saw much of the game with Anderlecht, but by all accounts, that's pretty much what happened again. Yeah. Just a little bit of extra class in the end, told.
Yeah. City were disappointed to come away. I think in a lot of ways it was a bit too easy for them against CSKA. They were too up and coasting, really. Probably should have had a third if they'd been given the penalty. And then it's sometimes hard to go back up the gears, isn't it, when you've slipped down them in the middle of a match?
Yeah, well, it's a funny scene to me, City. I mean, I was saying this last year, really. They just almost seem like a collection of superb individual talents who, when they play well, you know, obviously better than most. And, you know, Pellegrini, you can hardly criticise what he's done there. But when it comes to the real test, the real, you know, top-level European games and some top-level Premier League games, I'm not sure if he's got that extra little bit that's going to take City to that other level. I mean, they're at a fantastic level already, but there's been little evidence that they're going to, you know, win that Champions League in the immediate future. But, you know, they're still in there with a shout. You know, nobody would want to draw City in the knockout stage if they do get through. Mm. They've got fantastic players, but they just don't have that extra little bit for me at the moment that they need to win the tournament.
Yeah. On to Liverpool. We'll come on to Balotelli in a second or two, but
I
can't wait to get your views on it. Watching the game, you know, they wasn't like they were battering Real Madrid or anything, but they were relatively comfortable. They had, you know, the Gerrard effort quite early on as well. You can't really criticise them for conceding the first one, because it was the ball into Ronaldo was sublime from James Rodriguez, and the finish was beautiful. That seemed to hit them like a ton of bricks, though, Chris. And after that, they started to fall apart a bit. And Real Madrid are very, very, very good side, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's the first thing you need to sort of say, is that I think of all the sides I've seen visit Anfield probably over the last 20 years, you know, there's some that stick in my mind. You know, there was the great Arsenal team with Henry and Riera. There was the Barcelona team with Xavi. You know, there was a Valencia team with Rafa Benitez. Actually, Rafa Benitez Valencia team probably got him the job. You just play Liverpool off the park. And I think you've got to put that Real Madrid performance at Anfield right up there as among the best by visiting Team Anfield for many, many years. And they are, let's not forget, you know, the ultimate fantasy football team. You know, they just go around collecting every time, you know, a great player comes on the scene, every superstar, that's the ultimate destination. Not many youth products, I don't think, coming through their ranks, but, you know, that's just the way they are. So, you know, that's the point that has to be made straight away. But having said that, a lot of the problems that many people are focusing on with Liverpool this morning are not new problems. Yeah. And I think it's just the case that they were exposed so much. I think that is the frustration for Liverpool supporters, that they're not coming away surprised at the problems that were exposed.
I've been saying this for a few months now, but, you know, all the chat, of course, is about Suarez, and it will remain so. There was one way of covering over the Suarez departure, and that was to make the defence better, wasn't it? Because when you look at Liverpool's results last year, they scored a lot of goals, didn't they? A lot of Suarez goals were the kind of the second, third and fourth, maybe, or the, you know, the third and fourth, or fourth and fifth in a game. I'm not saying he wasn't worth his weight in gold, but if they'd have kept the defence a lot tighter, they wouldn't have had to score as many goals this season.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a basic match, you know. Yeah. John W. Endy's the big guy for the statistical formula as well. I think Suarez and Sturridge between them were something like 51 goals, and Liverpool's defence conceded 50 goals, something like that. Anyway, I've got the figures topped in my head. So you say, you're not going to get that many goals from your strikers, but, you know, reduce that number conceded by just 20, and there's a 20-goal striker, you know. And what's happening at the moment is they're conceding as many goals, and they're not going to score, and they haven't got anything up front at all, because Sturridge is out. And it's just... when you look at what's happened, £75 million comes in for Suarez to have nobody lined up. I mean, you know, pretty much 12 months in advance that you might have an issue with Suarez again. You then give him a contract, which gives him a get-out clause in. Yeah. So again, if anyone comes and meets that, you know he's going. To have nobody lined up other than Loic Remy, who had previous issues medically. Yeah. So for that to break down, and then you're scrambling around looking for a player, and then you go and buy, you know, if you do a list of quality Suarez, Luis Suarez, you've got to pick the player the complete polar opposite of Luis Suarez and expect it to work. Yeah. It's a max of arrogance, if I'm honest. Yeah. You know, well, we can make this Balotelli thing work where others haven't, or we can find the bargains around Europe that Chelsea and United and Arsenal and all these great clubs haven't spotted. I mean, it's just voodoo economics for me, thinking that he's going to buy players of a better value, and these other clubs have missed them. Then it just doesn't work. And you know, at the moment, it looks as though that Suarez money's being wasted, but time will tell. But it's not looking so good at the minute.
No, it's not. In terms of the Champions League, where they're placed at the moment, they are bottom of the table, but the three clubs, Basel, Ludogorets and Liverpool, are all on 3 points. Now, Liverpool have now got to go to Spain, of course, and you wouldn't expect them to get anything out of that game. You'd expect maybe Basel to beat Ludogorets at home after losing to them away this week in Bulgaria. You're trying to do a few sums here, but Liverpool could probably be 3 points behind Basel by the time the next round of games comes around, and that's when they go to Bulgaria and Basel are at home to Real Madrid. So, you know, if you're an optimistic Liverpool fan, you'd be thinking, all things being equal, going into the final group game, it could be Basel on 6 points, Liverpool on 6 points as well, and it all comes down to that final game in Switzerland. Now, you know, final game at Anfield against the Swiss, there's only one goal in it, you know, and it's not judged on goal difference, Chris, is it? It's judged on the head-to-head goal difference.
Absolutely.
So Liverpool got every chance of still qualifying from this group as long as they go to Bulgaria and win that game.
Absolutely. You know, and they've been in this situation before. I mean, you know, let's not forget what happened in 2004, and that was exactly the same scenario when they had to beat Olympiacos, and in that situation, they had to win by two clear goals, let's not forget. So, yeah, I mean, it's not all is not lost. And, yeah, I think that was actually a fantastic result for Liverpool last night. That's all lost. I mean, it's still pretty much in, you know, Liverpool's own hands. And I think you have to be extreme optimist that they're going to get anything against Madrid and the Bernabeu, unless Ancelotti takes mercy and there's a big game coming up and wants to rest his stars because they're virtually through. But you know, strange things do happen, because I can recall vividly that 2004-05 campaign and write an article that Liverpool's defeat to Monaco away and, you know, Olympiacos and this, you know, this is such a dreadful Liverpool team, you know, they're just going to crash out. And of course, we all know what happened. Football is strange. And I do think Liverpool have some good players, but they're just not a package at the minute. You know, you know, I mean, Sterling, I thought, was very encouraging again last night. He showed up well. I think Lallana's been getting better, you know. But last year, I think the sum of the parts was really so encouraging, whereas this year, it just looks very disparate and just desperate in defence. There's a lot of work to be done. There really is a lot of work. And I do think, you know, our point of mid, one of the other things about the 2004-05 campaign is Benitez took a hell of a lot of stick that year because he was doing a lot of resting in the Premier League, miserable performances away from home. I remember a place like Bolton, Crystal Palace. And Benitez's argument was, we haven't got the squad to cope with both. You just can't do it. You have to prioritise one rather than the other. And, you know, obviously your Europe became the priority. And he was obviously proven absolutely right in the end. I wonder whether Rodgers would be in a position to do that. Can he afford to say, look, we're just going to have to write off the Champions League, or we're going to have to just accept that we might not get top four in the Premier League? I'm not sure he can. And that is definitely becoming more and more of an issue, because the squad clearly is not capable of coping with both demands at this particular moment.
No. William Hill still have Liverpool as the favourites to qualify. Obviously, you know, not counting Real Madrid. 8-11 Liverpool, and Basel 2-1. So anyone who doesn't think Liverpool are going to make it, that 2-1 about Basel is probably quite a nice price. In the Telegraph today, Chris, you've the headline on the website says Mario Balotelli. I'll start again because I can't even say his name. In the Telegraph today, Chris, the headline says Mario Balotelli isn't to blame for everything. Where has it all gone wrong for Liverpool? I think we've touched on the second half of that headline that you've the story that you've written. If he's not to blame for everything, he's to blame for a fair bit of it, isn't he? Because, you know, again, as you've just said, really, I suppose you could blame Brendan Rodgers and the scouting system for saying it was a knee-jerk reaction. He doesn't give you, one, the goals, but two, and maybe more importantly, that first line of defence that Suarez gave you. You know, Suarez, and I hope this isn't you know, almost swearing to Liverpool fans, but he reminded me of Ian Rush in a lot of ways, the way he would harry and chase centre-backs. You know, I remember being a kid, and I was a Liverpool fan as a kid when they were winning everything at Glory Hunter. Rush would just run from player to defender to defender to defender, and he would just do that all match and harry them. And that was what Suarez gave you. You are not going to get anything like that from Mario Balotelli, and then we get this thing at half time.
Yeah,
it's not good enough. It's just not good enough, is it?
Absolutely right. You know, and of course, I think it's sadly predictable is there's a hell of an argument going on between Liverpool fans now. You know, he's dividing supporters because a lot of them are kind of sympathetic towards Balotelli, making, you know, perfectly reasonable point. Look, it was Liverpool's decision to sign him, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas others, as you're pointing out, saying, well, yeah, okay, that's all well and good. You know, it's not his fault, if you like, that Liverpool decided to sign him, but you've got a minimum you expect is to work harder and, you know, have a bit more of a radioactive heat map. You know, at the moment, it's like, you know, you see nothing. I mean, nothing at all. I mean, I don't even, I have to admit, I never thought knew or particularly if he was a good player or not. I mean, I've never seen, whenever I've seen him live, he's never impressed me. Now, others have seen him more than I have before he signed for Liverpool, and said, oh, no, you know, in flashes, he is good. You know, you can tap into that talent. At the moment, now this is going to sound incredibly harsh, he just looks like Sean Dundee with a good agent, as far as I'm concerned. Eric Meyer with a good agent. I mean, you know, at least, you know, it's something like Big Eric, he'd probably be on the phone because he worked hard, you know, and his fans liked him. Now, you know, people say that's absolutely ridiculous. This is a guy who's played for Inter Milan, Man City and all that. Fine. Where's the evidence? I'm in a Liverpool shirt. One goal in 10 games. How many real chances has he only had to have one against QPR? So he's getting praised then because he was in the box to miss it. But my Lord, what a miss. So, yeah, I mean, it's getting the balance. Yeah, I understand completely when people look, you can't just blame it all on him, and that's true. He's not the one who's conceded the three goals. At the same time, you know, he's getting well paid. You know, this was meant to be his last chance. You know, obviously he's not good enough, shouldn't be here. So, you know, just, clubs like Liverpool, don't forgive, you know, Fellaini I did at Manchester United last year, wasn't his fault David Moyes signed him. Yeah. But if you're not up to it, shouldn't be in the team, shouldn't be at the club. Yeah. So it's going to carry on. It's going to be all about Balotelli. I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I think there should be some psychological study as to why we're all obsessed with him, because we are. You know, much as I'd like to say, oh, don't want to talk about him, don't want to ask questions about him, don't want to write about him. You know, I've seen the digital figures about what happens when you write a story about Mario Balotelli and people want to read about him. So, you know, there's an obsession about him in the country, among supporters. I just don't know where it comes from, because yeah. I don't think he's a particularly good footballer.
No, and just look at, while you're chatting there, Chris, just looking at his goal record, and he had that, you know, when he went to Milan that first season he was there, and he only played 13 times and scored 12 goals the follow-up. But generally, he's a one every two games kind of man, which, I know that sounds good, but that's not, you know, you look at the records of someone like Aguero and obviously Suarez and Costa and the top strikers, you're looking at maybe one goal every one and a half games, you know, maybe one every game, you know, even. It's just not good enough for a top striker, that one every
two. Where you say one and two, I think they're the kind of stats that convinced someone at Liverpool that it was worth a gamble.
Yeah.
Now, what worries me is whether anyone's actually gone to the San Siro last year and sat there and watched maybe five back-to-back games and watched them. Because if they did, you know, AC Milan was meant to be his boyhood club. I mean, he obviously comes through at Inter. Mourinho's not having him. Goes to Man City, where, you know, Mancini's a big father figure. Eventually, City, you know, a party poppers are going when they sell him. Goes to his boyhood club. You think, well, like, right, you know, this time, this is where he's going to be settled. This is where he's going to do the business. Mm. Again, when he was sold, I think one of the AC Milan directors said it was, you know, party central in Milan. Surely the alarm bells have to ring at some point and go, well, you know, there's a bit of a common denominator here. You know, and I've seen so many Liverpool fans, players, strikers, signed for big money over the years, get, you know, a lot of stick. Emil Heskey stands out, you know, Stan Collymore, and these were, you know, pretty disappointing overall. But I tell you what, on the day they could play, you know, they would have monumentally great performances, and, you know, the criticism would be, why can't we do it every week? Why is it like 3 in 10 games? Well, 3 in 10 games, you take that from Balotelli at the moment, because you're getting none in 10 at the minute. Yeah. And so, you know, it is a problem. I think at the moment it looks a catastrophically bad decision to sign him. And for it to change, I think, I mean, every single facet of his game he's going to have to alter if he's going to, you know, stay at Liverpool much longer. And I don't know how you can change a guy who's 24.
No, starting with the simple one, really, I suppose, working hard. Just alongside those goal stats, interesting, you look at his how many yellow cards he picks up at every season, and just running back to 2008-2009, this is Serie A and the Premier League, 7, 7, 6 and a red, 6 and 2 reds, 2, 6, 10 and a red in his second season at Milan. So, you know, he doesn't bring goals, but he certainly brings disciplinary problems on and off the pitch. And I know, you know, Suarez probably did that. I think Suarez had 10 yellows in a season in his big season for season before last for Liverpool. But just one final question on the striker situation. It's one that I've been quite wondering, and no one's really been able to answer it for me. What's wrong with Lambert? Why wouldn't Lambert get a game and hold the ball up and give him a focus?
This is another issue. And again, you know, you talk about diversionary tactics of your guy with Balotelli, and that, you know, he's manager, you know, people to focus on him. You know, I've just spoken about him, contradicted myself by speaking about him for 10 minutes, but excuse me, Ricky Lambert, he's an England international striker, £4 million. What did he sign him for? What did Liverpool sign him for? Yeah. Now, if he can't get on when you've got no strikers left at the club, it's just, you know, it doesn't matter whether it was 16 million, 25 million or 4 million. You've got to, again, ask the question, who made that decision to sign him? You know, and everyone always, oh, it's Brendan Rodgers is signing. Well, I'll defend Brendan Rodgers on this, because it has been made clear pretty much since he came into the club that the manager is not having the sole decision of who signs the players at Liverpool. It's a committee decision. There's a committee, there's a group of guys who, I tell you, we've been trying to interview him for 2 years. Can you get near him? I mean, absolutely, you know, statisticians, you know, board members. And a lot of these names are coming to Rodgers, and in Rodgers, you know, they say he's got the final say whether to sign them or not. But I think there's a lot of pressure being put on him at times to make these decisions and go for it. And I don't know where Lambert fits into that. But if you know, you've got a certain way of playing, it almost seems sometimes that Brendan Rodgers had a certain set way of playing and a philosophy. And then he's been given players who don't fit that. And he's then had to evolve it and change it. Even last year, has to be said. You know, he made what he had into, you know, a unit that worked, because, you know, everyone, this time last year we were saying can Sturridge and Suarez play together? You know, Suarez was coming back from suspension and it was the big question. How was he going to make it work? And he did make it work by just tweaking the system. And now he could never possibly play the same system. Mm. Not just because Suarez has gone and Sturridge is injured, but if you're going to sort of want to play to your system, you've got to get like for like. I mean, you're not going to get the same player as Luis Suarez, but you could get somebody who runs around a bit and is a bit more kind of, you know, versatile and likes to take up wide areas and likes to come deep. And that kind of, well, we've got Ricky Lambert, who's clearly more static type, likes to play further up, needs runners playing off him, advancing forward. And then we've got Balotelli, and I don't know what he is. So, you know, again, it seems to me that this idea, they like to talk about strategy and, you know, meticulous scouting networks and stuff like that. The evidence is suggesting quite the contrary, really. And I mean, I'd even extend it to why Liverpool have got two lads on loan, Jordan Eby and Andre Wisdom. Don't know what they're doing on loan, because it looks to me as though Wisdom and Eby could probably be as good as anyone who's in the current Liverpool squad, who they paid money for. So, a lot of questions to be asked.
You're not kidding. There's one special bet that William Hill have put out about Mario Balotelli. It concerns his future, not surprisingly. The betting on whether he'll still be a Liverpool player on the 1st of February next year, obviously after the January transfer window, and if he'll still be a Liverpool player on the 1st of September 2015, after the summer transfer window. They think he will be at Liverpool after the January window. He's 1-4. So 4-1 on to still be at Liverpool, 11-4 to have left the club. And loan deals do count in this as well, interestingly. As for the summer transfer window, it's 15-8 on to still be a Liverpool player after the summer transfer window next season, 11-8 to have left the club on a permanent or loan deal. Do you think he's going anywhere soon?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Jamie Carragher said it on Sky during the game last night about how Robbie Keane, he only lasted till January. Now, Robbie Keane was a far more effective and striker for Liverpool in that season when he came second. And he was offloaded because he just didn't fit the style, didn't fit the system. Benitez wanted to correct it straight away. I think Robbie Keane's last game for Liverpool, he scored a brilliant goal against Arsenal, maybe got two at home against Bolton. Mm. You know, all for that kind of return now. Yeah. I think it's, you know, because of the Sturridge situation, Liverpool are going to have to go back in for a striker. I don't even know whether they've got enough money to spend big on a striker this January, but certainly they've got Divock Origi coming back and coming on from on loan next summer. So I don't see where Balotelli will be in the team this time next year. And if he's not in the team, you know, the potential for disruption is even greater. So.
Yeah.
We're only heading one way at the minute.
Yeah, and the safe bet there, I guess, is the 11-8 for September 2015, although you've got to wait a little bit. Let's have a look forward to the Premier League weekend. All returns at 12:45 on Saturday at Inform West Ham, taking on Man City. 9-2, the Hammers, who were fourth. 3-2 on the draw, and City were second, are 11-20. That's quite a short price. The other TV games are Swansea-Leicester. Swansea, a touch of odds on against Leicester, who are 13-5. Burnley-Everton on Sunday, 100-30, 13-5, and 3-4 for the other Merseyside team. And Man United-Chelsea, 4 o'clock on Sunday. Man United 15-8 at home, 23-10 the draw, and Chelsea a very attractive price, 7-5. Just a quick word on West Ham City first of all, Chris. City are usually fairly professional. I don't think they've failed to score less than two goals in any match away from home in the Premier League this season, but they're up against this West Ham team who have got this newfound confidence and goals coming from Valencia and Sacco. Sacco scored 6-6 now. A couple of great signings from Big Sam.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, sort of almost looking enviously at this Sacco lad, because you kind of think, well, you know, where have they found him from? You know, he, whether it'll last or remains to be seen, but, you know, some of his goals, fantastic finishes. And there's no doubt West Ham are a completely different proposition now. And I think it's just to say, you know, you get two or three, you know, really good additions in your team, it just transforms the team, just transforms them, you know. And, you know, obviously, there seems to be a lot made of the contrasting star between West Ham last year and this year. It may just be as simple as you've got a couple of strikers who can score goals now, you know, rather than a striker who's always injured. You know? You know, but, you know, you were just saying about City earlier. I mean, they just got, you know, when they turn up and all the players are on the game and they're so tough to beat in the Premier League. And well, I could see goals in that one. I could see, you know, maybe a 3-2 for City or something like that. Should be a great game.
Yeah. I was just looking at this, because you say about Sacco, and I should have looked into him a bit more because I've been backing him the last couple of weeks to score goals. Mm. But he was playing in the second division of the French league for Metz. They got promoted. Yeah. Scored 20 in 37. So you know, if you're looking around, it's not beyond the realms, is it? The evening game is Swansea Leicester. Probably not one that's going to keep people away from Strictly Come Dancing necessarily. Leicester have just fallen off a little bit, haven't they? Since that early season promise, the 5-3 win over Man United seemed to go to the heads a touch. They haven't been the same since, have they? Swansea will keep the ball, and Leicester will let them, won't they? I think in this game.
Well, yeah, I kind of think, you know, it will. You know, you get to that 10-game mark, aren't you, where you kind of want, you know, sort of see how the league's real pattern's going to go. There's always some shock results in the early weeks, and it looks pretty much as though Leicester are going to be where you'd expect Leicester to be, which is in that bottom part, trying to avoid relegation. But they've seen enough encouragement from them, especially at home. Because you've got pace in the team, and you've got Van the Premier League, you've got half a chance, you know. Swansea, funny really, because, you know, they do keep the ball extremely well, but sometimes they look as though they haven't quite got the cut and edge. But I don't think either of these teams is in danger of relegation, and as you said, I'm not entirely sure. I'd be rushing home from Anfield to get to the to get to the TV to watch that one. Well, we'd be deep into my third right of the write-up of the game.
Yeah, no doubt.
Getting the internet one polished off in time for the print version, you know. So we'll see.
And another striker on show who maybe Liverpool could have had a look at, and that's Wilfried Bony, of course. But
well, they were looking at him. Yeah, they were looking at him.
You wonder why no one took him, don't you? But
well, I think you know, and there's certainly Liverpool. You know, I think the wages, you know. Yeah. And they'll pay big money for someone if he's on pretty reasonable wages.
Yeah.
And they'll pay big wages if he's on cheap fee, but getting to do both.
Everton away at Burnley on Sunday. Burnley, until they start scoring goals, are only heading one way, and that's back to the Championship. But Everton, yeah. I get the feeling, Chris, that Everton are just starting to pick up a little bit of form. This could be back-to-back clean sheet for them as well, which will be a massive thing for them. They, of course, beat Aston Villa 3-0 last weekend, and you know, another clean sheet and a few goals, and they'll start to creep up that table even more, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, they've got the Europa League, yes, now, the aftermath of that. Now, it's just a question of what Roberto does in terms of Ross Barkley for me. Ross Barkley in that Everton team, Everton, completely different team with Ross Barkley. I mean, I just, you know, I can't really be a bigger fan of Ross, but I just think he's certainly the most exciting young player I've seen since, you know, on my patch, so to speak, since Steven Gerrard. I think he's got everything that he'll need. He's going to be a superstar. He's not world-class yet, but he's going to be, provided he's not going to get injured. And he just completely changed everything for Everton last week, because every time he gets the ball, you've got four or five players having to swarm to him. Opens up the space for Coleman and Baines. Lukaku look much better. So if Ross Barkley's playing against Burnley, I think Everton will win comfortably.
The final TV game of the weekend is arguably the best one, and that's Manchester United versus Chelsea. 15-8 Man U, as I said, 23-10 the draw, and 7-5 Chelsea. This game's shaped the Premier League title race many a year in the last decade. It's funny because last year I remember Jose Mourinho sending his team there, and it was quite early in the season, and they went very defensive against this Man U side. He probably, about 3 weeks later, he probably thought, why did I do that? The crap. I can't imagine him doing the same this season. Because you know, this Man United defence is creaking at the best of times, isn't it? I mean, they had less shots than Everton and West Ham at home. If they allow Chelsea as many shots as they've been allowing teams like Everton and West Brom and West Ham, Chelsea will beat them by a couple of clear goals, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, isn't it? What will the attendance be at Old Trafford? Because will anyone fit in with those two egos on the bench? they're going to love it, aren't they? I mean, you know, I think we've been waiting for Mourinho to go up against Van Gaal. And I think what would be even fantastic is some kind of contentious, controversial instances that we take each other after. You know, we can have a week of that as well. Because, you know, it's all very nice at the moment. It's all very nice. It never lasts. No. You know, I get the impression, really, that most managers at the top of this they all hate each other. They really do. You look at some of the comments. It's all very nicey-nicey beforehand, yeah. But just needs a little bit of a, you know, bad decision one way or the other.
If Van Gaal pushes him like Wenger does, he'll be in the back row, won't he?
I'll tell you, mine would be on Van Gaal.
Yeah, mine would as well. You ain't going to break his nose anyway,
yeah.
Are you? Because all the damage is done. What about the result in that one, Chris? What would you go for?
Oh, God, that could be anything, couldn't it? I mean, I think United look so good going forward, but then, you know, Chelsea, best defence. But then, you know, Chelsea haven't got Costa for that game, and obviously Remy's out, they might be short of strikers. And you just don't know what Mourinho's going to come and slide. He's the best. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he did go up there and go, just, you know what, we're just gonna do a job on them.
Grab a goal and shut them out.
You know, they can't beat us if they, you know, and try and get the 1-0 or 2-0 on the counter or something. I don't know, but then again, you know, for those eight, might go the other way. Say, go with all the rubbish at the back. Yeah. We're going to just destroy them. We're going to do what they, you know. And that's why Chelsea is so far ahead of anybody else at the moment, because they can play so many different ways and approach it. Yeah. I think United have only got one way to play at the minute, and that is to just go for it. Yeah. And I think Mourinho will know that. So, gosh, I can't predict that one. I mean, I'd have to say, on balance, Chelsea, based on form, but, you know... How many times do you predict United are going to get beat at home at Old Trafford?
Despite hanging on against those last two home games against Everton and West Ham. We ask each of your colleagues every week for a bet of the week, Chris. So something that you think will happen. Is there anything that you like in particular?
I'd probably say Lukaku to get a couple of Burnley. I think he's had a little bit of a tricky start, but I think he looked better last week with Barkley back. And I do think there's going to be more joy for Lukaku now to go on a bit of a run when Bartley's back in the side. So, first goal at Burnley, Romelu Lukaku.
Here's all the odds for him. The first goal is 9-2, so you get 55 quid back for a tenner. Just to score any time in the game, 11-8, and two or more is 15-2. So if you were to place a £10 bet, 85 quid back on that.
Okay.
So if he scores one early and you're on the two or more, you'd be like off your seat every time, wouldn't you? Your bags there. Chris, thanks for your time, mate. It's been I've kept you far longer than I expected to, but I forgot we were recording and chatting on the radio for a second. Cheers, Chris. Have a great weekend. Thanks for your time.
No problem. All that.
And make sure you check out Chris's work on the Telegraph, of course, the Merseyside correspondent for the newspaper, available in print form, of course, and online as well. You can download this podcast from footballwriters.co.uk. You can get it at williamhill.com/podcasts. It's also available on iTunes, as are the rest of the football podcasts, and you can find it at audioboom.com. Thanks for listening. If you're having a bet on anything that we've discussed today, very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.